Old Alley Ice House, a conservatory, a laundry, and a stone stable in addition to the office.
See, this is Bill Alderfer, field representative, State Historical Society, here at the home of Nelson J. LeClaire of Two Rivers, Wisconsin. This is the 30th of June, 1960.
Victorian architectural details are combined with earlier simple Greek revival motifs throughout the house.
We'll be able to pick this up
the second
right
floor
along.
Room, the bedrooms, sitting room, and a beautiful family chapel.
Nels, would you
this canopy bed is in the nursery where generations of Dowsman children were raised.
When you were born and
Nelson Dewey House at Castro was acquired along with 770 acres of land in 1935.
Part of our history of the
now only two stories high, the house
Wisconsin.
Was once a three-story peak dormered Gothic house valued at $75,000. The servants' quarters is one of the five original buildings.
From the time I was born in the Conservation Commission.
The wine cellar with its pointed dormer.
How long space was that?
Recalls the original appearance of the house before it was gutted by fire. This is the smokehouse, which stands near the back.
Well, now look, you can either tell me how old you are.
Portraits
I'm
of Governor Mrs. Dewey hang on one wall of the living room.
Yeah. Okay,
rooms
well, we'll figure out when you were born.
That's in 1877.
1877.
The dining room with its high windowed bay facing
and then you fished for a while here in.
You see, I was born in 1877.
In front is unique texture of a house.
And I moved to Two Rivers from Seymour,
main
Wisconsin.
Main rooms on the first floor open from a commodious entrance hall where
my
fine chair cabinet and desk are displayed.
To Two Rivers and went into the fishing business.
The open stairs to the second floor rise in one corner of the entrance
time.
Hall.
Uh-huh.
At present, only one bedroom in the second floor.
He was
floor
fishing before
the
that
the
he ever went away from
interior.
Two Rivers. He was a pioneer fisherman.
In addition to the buildings near the house, the estate included large barns, sheds,
and
a raceway.
Local people that went to fish.
Nelson Dewey Park and Picnic Grounds stretched along high bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River.
Charles LeClaire.
Charles
LeClaire.
Charles LeClaire.
And so he, on account of mother, he had to quit the fishing business and go away from the lake on account of sickness, because she had asthma. And then he went to Appleton and worked there for a year or so, and then he bought a farm in Outagamie County, in Seymour, Outagamie County.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I was born.
You were born there in 1877.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to be a farmer, evidently.
Well, I had no choice at that time, but at the same time, my brother Charlie had been in the fishing until he was 14 years old. He had been living here with my dad fishing. And when my dad moved away, he always had a hankering of going back fishing. And so after he stayed there in Seymour, he came to Two Rivers and got married to a girl. And he went back to Seymour and he insisted that my dad go with him back fishing. And that's how they came back to Two Rivers.
Nice.
You see, and so he came back and I was 6 years old. And of course I was with him all the while, and that's how I got to go and be in the fish business. When my dad got old enough that he couldn't work anymore, then he says to me, he says, you take my place. And I was 14 years old, so I took over the business of the fishing, his part
in the fishing. Well, you were 14 years old then. That would put it up to around 1901. All right. Now, when did you get interested in the conservation movement? Maybe you didn't call it that in those days.
No. When I got interested in the conservation, there were certain people, you know, that went to Madison and wanted to pass laws to regulate the fishing, or that is, want to stop certain fishermen from fishing and so on. See,
no.
the dealers were behind it. The dealers wanted to kind of hamper the fishing industry. So, of course, the older fellas than I was, there was the assemblyman, you know, from this district and so on. Whenever there was something that was contrary to what the fishermen thought should be, they'd go down to Madison and fight the bills.
I see.
And it kept on. And I was always with these fellas and was very much interested. And pretty soon, this individualism didn't work. You had to organize a fishermen's association.
Oh, I see.
And we were organized the fishermen's association in the Waverly basement. We had all the fishermen come there together and we talked things over. And I was only a young fella. But what did they do? All these older men, they said, you be our president. So they put me president of the association.
Uh-huh.
Well, see, that was too much. I thought that was too much. But I accepted it. And from that time on, anything that went, well, I was always at the head of the, well, for the fishermen. I was spokesman for the
fishermen. What were some of the things that you were, well, I don't know how to put that, what were you discussing in those days? I mean, things were different. What were the problems that you were trying to solve?
The problem was, the fishermen wanted a closed season. Instead of going out on the reefs and slaughtering the fish by the boatloads, they wanted to stop fishing during that period in order to let the fish spawn, and then after they were spawned, then catch them. But the dealers of the community, of the country, all over, didn't want that stopped. They wanted the fishermen to continue to fish and catch an abundance of fish during that time. And they bought them for a cent a pound or two. And they made money with that. Turn around and sell them for 10, 15, 20 cents after they had them. And it was wrong. It shouldn't do that. It hurt the market for the fish. See?
Yeah.
It hurt the fisherman because he went and caught them, gave the stuff away, and there was no income from it. And that's where the thing was boiling. And of course they went down to Madison, you know, and put in bills, you know,
to close it.
They didn't want to stop. See? They had a bill for a closed season. And pretty soon they wanted to open it up again. And that was the fight.
Who down in Madison were helping you out, helping the fishermen out in this?
There was nobody in Madison. There, even the assemblyman from our own district didn't help the fishermen, whatever. They were, in other words, they were kind of against the fishermen.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
These people got the that we were a bunch of racketeers, see? We were catching the fish in an abundance and we didn't know how to handle it. That was the word that went around.
I see.
And we couldn't convince the people that it wasn't so.
You were trying to tell them you needed a closed season in order to operate right.
Yeah. We wanted a closed season, and that was enough.
That was enough.
We didn't want MASH laws. We didn't want any regulation whatsoever about the way to catch fish. They started to stop the fishing in the inland waters, no nets, all sorts of stuff. And they wanted only certain kind of nets to be used in the water. And that's the kind of bills that they were putting into the legislature, and we were trying to fight it. And finally, the state created the Conservation Commission. And the fellows they put or appointed on the Conservation Commission were all fellows that wanted to control the fishing industry. Fellows that believed that they could control it. Well, if you're going to put a man that says, I'm going to control it, well, he's going to try to control it. And his way of controlling it was not the right way. The commission didn't have the know-how to control the industry.
Well, now, you worked in the conservation department at one time, didn't you?
I was a conservationist.
You were a conservationist?
I was on the commission.
You were on the commission. When was that you were on that?
I was appointed by Schmiedemann.
Schmiedemann. Well, that was in the 20s or 30s.
Huh?
Was that in the 30s, 1930s?
30.
32 or somewhere around
there. Somewhere in that area.
Yeah, Schmiedemann. But before that, you had, had you ever worked at any fisheries or, I don't mean fishery, but hatcheries? Did you ever get into that end of it?
I was opposed to the hatchery from the beginning.
You were?
Yes. We didn't believe in hatcheries. We claim that the fish could produce its own supply without a hatchery. We didn't believe in catching a fish, squeezing the fish, the eggs out of the fish, and in a pail, and then pregnant it, and give it a railroad ride to some hatchery. No.
You didn't believe in that?
No, not at all.
Well, now this was Nevins, wasn't it?
That was Nevins.
Nevins.
Yes, Nevins.
Well, what about, did you know Nevins personally?
I knew him personally.
You didn't think much of what he was trying to do?
No. He was the start of the ruination of the industry. Absolutely. Because his way of controlling the fish supply was all wrong. He had the wrong idea. There was nothing that he proposed that was right. It was just opposite of right. I know that because I was with him and I fought everything that he introduced.
Well, now, how general was that feeling against this hatchery idea around? Well, just say your acquaintance with
the only ones that favored. Now here, get this: the only one that favored the hatchery was the ones that went on the reefs and fished and caught fish. Fishing for the hatchery.
Oh, fishing for the hatchery.
For the hatchery.
I see.
They're the only ones that said they, well, they thought it was a good thing.
Now, what is this going on in the reefs? This is something I've never heard about. There's evidently a couple of different kinds of fishing that you can do.
Now here. The trout and whitefish has certain places in the lake that they spawn. And that's what we call a reef.
I see.
It's a big rock bottom bed in the lake. Stone, rock and stone. All, and that's all circular. And if you want to find a reef, all you got to do is they're the ones that invented the telephone, as far as that's concerned, is just take a rope and a grapple, and you drag it behind your boat, and you find out where the reefs are. You find
I see.
Them. And then you set your nets on there, and the trout or whitefish come and lay their eggs there, and it's the only place they lay their eggs.
Well, now you were one of these. Would you describe yourself as one of these people that would have let it all alone, except for the closed season? You felt that was, you were fighting for a closed season, but other than that, you didn't want any other kind of regulation.
No.
Well, now of course things have changed, and there's a lot of regulation. I guess
there's too much regulation. Yeah.
Well, who would you say, besides, we talk about Nevins here, who would you say was responsible for this regulation?
Well,
I'm talking about fisheries now.
The fellows that was responsible for these regulations, MASH laws, and equipment laws, or a certain kind of nets and everything, was Frank Grass.
Frank Grass.
Yes. The worst man that the state of Wisconsin has ever produced. He's the biggest liar and the biggest humbug that the state has ever produced. He's the fella.
Why did he want all these laws?
Because he was the bookkeeper of Columbaugh that wanted to control the fishing industry. Columbaugh was a dealer. We had dealers here in town. We had two dealers in town that bought material for the fishermen to go fishing. And then they wanted to control them. They had to fish the way they said, or else. And they bought all the fish that they brought in. And they paid them what they wanted. And that's the way the thing was. And the first ones that found out that it wasn't the proper thing was the Leclercs. We started our own shipping. We shipped our own fish. We wouldn't stand that we had to go and dump the fish on their dock and they ship it and then pay whatever they felt the fish was worth. So we shipped our own fish to Chicago. We were the first people that built our fish sheds, ice houses, and shipping equipment, and shipped our own fish. And of course, the fishermen all followed suit. They all done their own. We didn't tell them to go, but they done like we did. And in Sturgeon Bay, Columbaugh, when he found out that the fishermen went down there, you know, and fished, and they shipped their own fish, They didn't come and sell fish to him. He got a float in there. And then anything he could do against the fishermen, why, he did. So, you see, that's how your laws are passed.
Yeah. Well, what are the changes in the fishing over the years that seem to you to be most important to the industry?
You mean the harm that it done?
Well, harm or good? Is there anything good about it these days? Or was there any good ever done for the fishermen?
The biggest harm that was done to the fishermen was your mashlaw.
Mashlaw.
You can't regulate a net to catch a certain kind of fish. It won't do any good. You've got to allow a 2-inch mash to catch a chub. You got to have a 4-inch mash or bigger for trout and whitefish. Well, now how can you say, well, you got to have a 2-inch mash to catch trout, and you got to have a 4-inch mash to catch trout when it's set in the same water? How can it be done?
Yeah.
And another thing, they got so strict with their mash law that if it was they got the stretch measure, as they call it, flexible rule. I was opposed to the flexible rule. I says a mash is measured, stretched as stretch measure. And if it measures, you can pull it until it breaks. And if it measures 2 inches or 3 inches or whatever it measures, that's the measurement. And a flexible rule don't work. How is that? Well, I says, you can't get a guarantee that a manufacturer can measure or put in a measure, flexible rule measure, and guarantee that every flexible rule will measure alike. Well, so try. I says it's a trifle, and that's enough. And McKinsey tried, you know, when this law was passed, he wrote to the companies that made flexible rules and wanted them to guarantee that they would be absolutely alike. And he said, we can't do that. You see how wrong he was? He insisted that that shall be a law, and that that law shall convict people on that flexibility. And that's wrong.
Who was McKinsey?
He was the director of conservation. You should have heard of him.
How long ago was that?
1930.
How long did he last?
Well, his first work was to get rid of Kelter. And Kelter didn't suit him, so he got rid of him. Conservation Commission had Kelter to resign. And then the Conservation Commission had enough grit to hire McKinsey as commissioner. That was the biggest mistake that the conservation ever made. And I was on commission. And one fellow accused me. He accused me face to face of hiring McKinsey. I says, now here, I says, I did not vote for McKinsey. I didn't want him. I says, I didn't vote for him. But he says, how in the dickens are we going to prove that? He's in. I says, I didn't vote for him. I wanted somebody else. But they insisted on getting him in. And he's the fellow that was very much the cause of our trouble in the fishing industry.
This because of these various laws, you mean?
Various laws.
Various laws were passed. Was that
He was so very much to enforce the laws. Before McKinsey went in, we had some trouble at Green Bay, and on account of they call them fish yet, bass, no, black bass, and they were shipping bass from Sturgeon Bay and from the Green Bay area. And they couldn't catch the fellas that were shipping. And they were blaming the commercial fishermen for this shipping of these fish. And there's a fisherman, a fella, a conservationist, asked me to come. I was on the commission. He asked me to come down to Little Sturgeon to a meeting. The sportsman wanted a meeting down there. They wanted to stop this smuggling of bass. Well, who was smuggling? I didn't know, or nobody knew exactly. And the fishermen were all there. All the fishermen were there. And they were blaming the fishermen for this shipment of. And while we had a meeting and going through the arguments, one fellow made a statement. He says, now he says, here. He says, there is no law, he says, against anybody, he says, with a hook and line. He says, coming ashore, he says, with a load of bass. He says, you can have the bass, it ain't against the law. But he says, let a fisherman come in, he says, with bass. He says, and they got him arrested. He says, these fellas, he says, they got a hook and line, he says. And they go out, he says, and they lift our nets. And he says, they take the bass that's in the net out. And he says they fetch him ashore because they got a hook and line. And that was the case that was going on. They'd go and lift the nets, you know, and take the bass out. And then they blamed the fishermen for selling bass.
Sure, yes.
So, well, there was Everton Fawn here, and Frank LeClaire was along with me. And says, what you going to do about it? Well, I says, I'm going to call up Kelter. Kelter was commissioner. I says, now here, Kelter. I says, here you got smugglers, crooks, I says, up there, I says, catching bass. I says, they ain't no fishermen. I says, they're stealing the fish out of the nets of the fishermen. And I says, then they ship them. What can we do about that? He says, that's the sheriff's law. You see, they were stealing, see? That was the sheriff's law. No, I says, that ain't the sheriff's law. I says, these fellas ain't got no license. I says, for fishing, nets. I says, but they got a license, I says, where they can have a hook and line. Now I says, what you've got to do, I says, is get somebody, I says, up there. I says, and find out that that's being done. And I says, if that's being done, I says, if you catch them at it, I says, well, arrest